Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The latest special education report provides an overview of education in South Dakota for kids with special needs. It's an educational field that continues to evolve. Linda Turner is the Director of Special Education for the South Dakota Department of Education, and she joins us now on the phone from Pierre with an overview of the report. Linda Turner, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Lori.
Let's start with what the special education report is overall. Tell us, is it something that's federally required?
Yes, the special education report is a federally required six-year plan that states have to report our progress for implementing both compliance and results indicators. The current cycle for our plan will end with the reporting cycle next year in 2019. We submit that report on February 1st. Currently, we have 17 indicators that are part of that report that vary from compliance, including how we suspend and expel students, conduct evaluations, transition students from high school, and results indicators that include graduation, dropout, academic performance, parent involvement. There are transition components in that as well.
Tell us a little bit how some of the data is compiled. What goes into putting it all together for the report?
Sure. The report includes information about our general supervision system, technical assistance, professional development. We gather information throughout the year on those components through our accountability process. Districts submit data directly based on some of the indicators, and we have a survey for parents that they complete. All that information is compiled either through our special education office, or some of the data is used as part of our overall state report card, and that information matches both the special education report and the report card information.
So from your perspective, when do you start seeing these numbers all put together? Do you see things as they come through and it's a moving target for you, or are you waiting for this report as head of special education in the state?
We see components of the data throughout the year, depending on the cycle of collection. So currently, we're collecting a lot of the end-of-year wrap-up information, such as when students, how they graduated or ended their school program this year, whether evaluations were completed throughout the year in a timely manner. During the year, we collect information through our accountability visits on the transition components. So we see that a lot of that information in fall and early winter. In December, we collect our December 1 child count, so the total number of students that are in our programs as well as the environments that they're served in. We see that final report in February, and that's included in the information. So throughout the year, we're reviewing and evaluating the data that's coming in, and it just culminates in that final report.
So then how is the data applied then? Is it do you wait for the final report to start making some of the priorities and the adjustments, or is that an ongoing process as well?
Our program office uses that information on a fluid basis to determine if we need to make adjustments in what training we do. We provide information through a webinar for our districts and a newsletter on a monthly basis. And so if we see something that's triggering that we need to work on, we'll put that information out there right away and perhaps plan a professional development opportunity. For districts, we do provide an annual report of their data after the state report has been submitted. And so they see all of that in one place at the same time, but they also have access to their data and results throughout the year as they're submitting it to us.
Let's talk a little bit about the target rates for the state. They're not all just 100%, like you might think a target rate for everything is, we want to hit 100%. Explain to people target rates and how they're determined.
Sure. There are some targets that are set at either 0 or 100%, and those are compliance indicators. Those are things like completing evaluations within the specified timeline that they're required to have them completed, having all the required components for transition. And we either expect either all of the evaluations are completed on time or none of the components of transition are missing. But then the other indicators that tie more closely to how students are actually performing, we consider those results indicators. Those targets are set by stakeholders for the 6-year period that the report runs. And we gather all of the information on our state data. We present national statistics to the stakeholders. We look at what improvement programs we have in place that we're targeting to improve in those areas. And based on all that information, the stakeholders set targets. Now, those can also be fluid if we need to make changes to those, such as when our state moved from one assessment system to another, we knew that results may be impacted by that change. So we gathered our stakeholders together again and we reviewed the assessment data, made some changes in our targets at that time. If there are any other changes, such as our graduation requirements have changed, if we think that's going to have an impact, we'll bring that stakeholder group together again to look at that information and determine if we need to change our targets or not.
All right, let's take a look at the numbers now. What do we learn from this year's reports from that big picture standpoint? What are you seeing?
Well, this year we have really been seeing over the last several years an improvement in our secondary transition, and we collect this throughout the fall and early winter through our accountability visits. There are 8 criteria that we expect to see districts implementing on students' individual IEP plans that focus on that transition and making sure those components are all in place. We've also seen a drop in the number of students with disabilities that are dropping out of school. So we know that they're either continuing on through their age of eligibility the year that they turn 21, or they're graduating with a diploma. So we have some strong post-school outcomes. We think all of that is kind of tied together. The improvement in the secondary transition may be helping students stay in school, which is also helping them have strong outcomes when they leave. The other area that we have done really well in the state over time is our educational environment, and that's where students are placed to receive their services. We want to see students most involved in the general education classroom with their peers because that's where they're going to get most of their learning and the content that all students are in order for them to keep moving forward. And so we do have a high number of students placed in that least restrictive environment. And parents being included in the educational process through our parent indicator, the survey, parents are indicating that schools really are helping them facilitate their involvement, and we see strong numbers and continue to improve our reporting rate in that area and making that accessible to parents. But they're showing that they are engaged in the schools.
And IEP, for folks who don't know, Individualized Education Plan, is that something every student with special needs has, you know, by definition?
Yes, every student that is identified as having a disability and eligible for services will have their own individual education plan, which outlines the goals that they're going to work on throughout the year, as well as any services and supports they need in order to benefit from that education.
You mentioned least restrictive environment. Let's talk a little bit more about that so people have an understanding. What does that look like in a classroom basis for kids in a, you know, in a classroom?
So that it can really vary by the individual. Some students may be able to be included in their classroom to a very great extent and might just have some accommodations. They might need some extra time to complete some work. They might need, instead of taking notes from the board, they may have the teacher provide an outline of the notes that they can have at their desk so it's easier for them to follow along. It can also range to a student having a support of a paraprofessional during part of that class time to help them stay on track or cover additional skills as they come up. In some cases, we see co-teaching with general education and special education teachers in the same classroom so that student is getting the instruction in the classroom, and then they may break into small groups, and the special education teacher would have a small group of students that they're working with where they're making sure that student is addressing their goals and meeting the needs of all the students that are in the room. So it can look very different depending on the needs of the student, the structure of the school. But then we move into things like removing the student from the classroom for part of the day to get some real specialized in-depth instruction away from their peers. And that amount of time, we count against their environmental setting. We want to have them included with their peers to the greatest extent possible. Now, that is only as it is appropriate for a student. There are some students that being in that general ed classroom to the majority of the day is not appropriate for their needs at the moment. They may have some more significant behavioral or learning needs that they need that very intense instruction away from the classroom. And so for those students, it is appropriate. That's why we don't, that area isn't 100% goal. We don't want all students in the general ed classroom 80% of the day or more, because it is really individualized for that student.
And what about preschool? Is there, do these numbers include preschool learners?
We do report preschool. The program we work under is called Part B, which includes children age 3 through 21. Children 3 through 5 are considered preschool age and are eligible for special education services from the public school district if they have a disability. Now, many of our school districts don't have full-time preschools and will provide preschool either in a daycare setting, or the student may just need speech and language services that they come to the school to receive those. They might have just a very small group of students that receive preschool services from the school in a class setting. But that is one of the areas, as far as least restrictive environment, that environmental setting for our preschool students that we do want to work on in the state, because we want more inclusive kinds of settings that we can work with those students with their general peers.
Talk for a minute before we dive back into more of the indicators about the importance when we think about preschool and being so many places across the state where parents of kids with disabilities maybe can't afford or don't have access to inclusive early childhood programs. What's the impact of having those services available or not on a family's life?
So for a student with a disability, if it's determined as part of the IEP program that that student needs that integration and that inclusive kind of setting, it is the responsibility of the school district to make sure that that's available to them. But as we know, in a lot of our rural settings, that can be a struggle because there isn't the programming available, or because of the distance families live from a school or a preschool. So we do the best we can in using community settings as well, daycares, Head Starts, maybe library programs, trying to bring those students with general education peers and trying to meet their needs that way.
All right, let's talk about what we learned from this year's report about challenges and priorities for the future. Where do we have room for improvement?
So some of the things that we really do want to work on are those preschool outcomes. We see improvement in the language and communication skills of our students in preschool, but one of the areas that we want to continue working on is their social and emotional skills and how they're performing in that area. And that could relate to their access to being with other peers. We continually want to work on the academic performance of students with disabilities and how they perform in reading and math and science and those academic areas. That's reported both on our state special education report and on our state report card. You can see how students with disabilities disaggregate. And they are one of the categories that are performing low in that area. We collaborate very closely with our Office of Learning and Instruction, our title office, and the Assessment and Accountability Office to provide programming that's inclusive for general education and special education teachers on instructional strategies that are going to best meet the needs of all students. So there is a strong focus on that at the department and in special education programs.
So for perspective, reading proficiency rate on statewide assessments, the reading target's 39%, 39.33%, the reading actual 18.83%. So when you have a big challenge like that, how do you break that down into a strategy that can make a difference?
So one of the things that we have done is in our state performance plan, we do have an indicator that was designed to focus on a specific area that we wanted to improve results. And so it's called our State Systematic Improvement Plan. In that area, based on stakeholder feedback, we are focusing on improving literacy for students by the time they're taking that test for the first time in third grade. And so those early instructional strategies to improve literacy so that student is caught up at that time and will continue to perform well throughout the years. So we've focused on that through special education. Additionally, we've applied for a federal grant called the State Personnel Development Grant that we work collaboratively with the Office of Learning Instruction, and we have a 9 partner districts that are focusing on improving that literacy as well. So those initiatives are very similar to each other, but one has, we're focusing on the total teaching population in the school district, general education and special education, to improve those reading strategies. We know there are a lot of students that may have reading struggles as well that aren't necessarily identified as students with disabilities, or if you can provide those strategies early, then they don't fall behind and end up being a student with a disability. So having those good instructional reading techniques in place not only makes a difference for the students with disabilities, but all students that may struggle.
How important, you mentioned federal grants or federal funding, how important is federal partnerships to really, in a state like South Dakota, to have the resources to move forward and make differences in special education in the state?
In special education, we're very lucky to have some very strong national technical assistance centers, and having that partnership with the federal government to be able to access those centers or access to additional grant funding really lets us implement some things that we would not be able to do without having that. We do provide some of the training, but the follow-up with that is really supported through those grant projects. So we're able, through the grant project, to have some coaches that are working with teachers throughout the year to improve their literacy instruction, whereas without that grant funding, we may be able to provide the literacy training, but the follow-up would be more difficult and fall upon the districts, or there might not be qualified people to help teachers follow up with those skills after they've learned them in the training.
Certain indicators in the report, in the special education report for South Dakota, have minimum reporting numbers of, low number, 10 or 20 students. Help us put that into perspective. So when we look at an indicator like expulsion rate by ethnicity, and, the target is 0% and the actual is 0%, but if the minimum reporting is 10 to 20, what do we know and what do we not know from this data?
Right. So in order to protect a group of students and make sure that we aren't identifying students in a local community or at state level, And because of validity and reliability in the calculation of indicators, we are able to set some minimum numbers that are necessary to either calculate that area or to protect the privacy of students. And so in some of those areas for suspension and expulsion, for example, we're breaking out not only the number of students that were suspended and expelled that had a disability, but also breaking them out by what ethnicity category they're in or what disability category they're in. And you can have some really small reporting numbers in some districts where if you're reporting that one or two students of that certain ethnic category or disability category, anyone from that community or surrounding area may know who those students are. So it's important to protect the privacy of our students, as well as the fact that if you're looking at numbers just 0 to 10, one student can make a huge difference in the percentage you're reporting. So if you have one student out of the 10, you're already at a 90%, and it can swing those calculations very dramatically. So that's why we have the ability to set those minimum reporting numbers.
Is there another way that you're measuring it and looking for challenges in that area then?
So we do see the data internally ourselves. One of the ways that you can look at that data is over a 3-year time period and see how that's changing over that time period. And we do that internally, and the districts have access to their data as well. It's just not publicly reported. So that is something that we follow up on. If we see something significant, we'll follow up with districts on that as well. It's just the public availability of that data.
For parents who want to find out more about their district or about the report overall, where can they go online to sort of see these numbers we've been talking about, Linda?
Right. We have all of the district reports posted in the special education page on the Department of Education, and the Department of Education webpage is just doe.sd.gov. On that first main page, there is a parent section, and there is special education there. If they click that link, it'll take them to the special education main page. And then under data and reporting, there is a category for our state performance plan, which lists all of the indicators, the resources we have available, as well as at the bottom of the page, all of the district reports are available. We're currently working on posting the district reports for this last reporting cycle. And so they may be out there already, or they'll be out there shortly.
Linda Turner is Director of Special Education for the South Dakota Department of Education. She joined us on the phone from Pierre to talk about the latest special education report numbers. Linda, very informative. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.